Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Hey, folks, before we talk to Mary Trump, let's talk about the after party. Every single Friday, Kimberly Johnson and I record a fourth podcast each week. But this one's different from the usual Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday shows. The Friday After Party podcast is loaded with all the politics you want, while also including uncensored, completely obscene conversations about sex, drugs, movies, television, our personal lives, all the crapola we can't get away with on the free show. And it's generating all kinds of comments and conversation on our Patreon page at BobSeskaShow.com. Don't miss out. Please help support this show by subscribing to our Friday After Party podcast for just $10 per month. That's BobSeskaShow.com or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSeska.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Recorded live in the USA, covering the whole wide world.
Right on!
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, January 27, 2021, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. My guest is one of our faves on the show. The great Mary Trump is here today. Mary is, of course, a clinical psychologist and the niece of the ex-president. She's also the author of the must-read book, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. Link in the description at BobSeska.com. You can follow Mary's work and her brilliant political commentary on Twitter, at Mary L. Trump. Today we're going to talk about the insurrection and its aftermath, frustrations with the Senate, how Uncle Donald is coping with losing the election, and a whole lot more. Meanwhile, if you like what you hear today, don't forget to subscribe to our bonus content at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Okay, let's catch up with Mary Trump. So, you know, when we were setting up the show, you told me you were in something of a mood. That is a direct quote. You're in something of a mood. Talk to me, Mary. Talk to me. I'm listening.
Oh, man. Last night, I don't know why, but that vote in the Senate just pushed me past the point I didn't ever want to get to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm so angry and exhausted. And anger isn't the right word. Yeah. I mean... Because part of it is like, we can't enjoy anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we win Georgia. Oh, there's an armed insurrection being incited.
Yeah.
You know, the inauguration was great, but the Republicans still try to turn us into a fascist dictatorship. And they still seem to have power. And
yeah.
It's
yeah.
just, and they're totally cool with mm-hmm. the destruction of our democracy. Totally cool with it, as long as they're the ones who steal the power. It's fucking exhausting.
Yeah, yeah. It's infuriating. And it doesn't seem fair, the fact that we now ostensibly have a Senate majority. I mean, if you include Kamala Harris, as far as the votes go. And in mm-hmm. fact, Mitch McConnell backed away from the power sharing deal. And there are certain reasons for that, too. But the fact of the matter is, even though we have a pretty solid majority in terms of at least 51 votes, it still seems like they've got power. And I know exactly what you're talking about. In fact, Kimberly and I were having this exact same conversation last night. How could it possibly be that Mitch McConnell and especially some of the insurrectionists still have a voice in Congress after everything that we've been through, and yet they still do? It's immensely frustrating.
And also, let's not even get started on Kristen Sinema. From whatever the fuck her name is, and Joe Manchin,
mm-hmm.
because, like, they, I mean, one, it's just stupid. Oh, absolutely nothing will change my mind about this incredibly racist, outmoded filibuster that wasn't even in the Constitution.
Right.
So that's bad enough. But then, like, why was this vote even called yesterday? I mean, doesn't the majority decide what gets brought to the floor for a vote?
Yeah, that's what I thought. And given the fact that, once again, Mitch McConnell backed away from the power-sharing deal because of, strangely enough, Manchin and Sinema. It seems to me as if that would be the case. Like, Chuck Schumer would be able to make all of these calls. But what we're learning is that very clearly the Republicans, especially under Mitch McConnell, they will pull no punches. I mean, they will go all out and do everything they possibly need to do. This is like back when Amy Coney Barrett was up for confirmation. I felt as if the Democrats should start playing like Mitch McConnell does, which is to use every possible cudgel in the arsenal to make sure that the process was slowed down as much as possible. It doesn't seem like the idea of what would Mitch McConnell do resonates very much in the Democratic Party, does it?
No, and the problem is that I mean, besides the fact that they're not reading the room, they're also misinterpreting what that means. You know, the whole we go high bullshit. That doesn't mean you're a doormat. That doesn't mean that you don't fight. It just means that you don't cheat, lie, and steal.
Right.
Like, you can fight really hard within bounds and still win.
Yeah.
You know, I have a second-degree black belt. And, you know, you can still beat somebody by playing fair, by fighting fair. You know, you just need the tools and the willingness to use them.
In fact, I'm in that mode right now, Mary. I'm in, speaking of second degree black belt, I'm in that Cobra Kai mode where it's like strike first, strike hard, no mercy against the Republicans. Yep. That's exactly where I am.
Yeah. Like, you know, if somebody's attacking you, you don't ask their permission.
Yeah.
You know, you don't ask them, oh, is it okay if I, you know, kick you in an incredibly sensitive area and, you know, neutralize you? No, you don't ask. You're getting attacked. You're having your country destroyed in front of your very eyes.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're being subtle about it. This vote yesterday was an admission of guilt. And it was also not a warning, but it was a straight up confession that they are going to do absolutely nothing to make this trial fair. They, you know, it's one thing. I mean, I don't think the Democrats should do this either, but, you know, to say ahead of time how you're going to vote in favor of removing him, you know, you're going to convict him. Again, you should wait and see the evidence. However, we already have evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense to me. But if you say ahead of time you're not going to vote to convict, that's a problem. Because there is evidence and there will be more. So how can you know that unless you're just rigging the system in your favor and they're basically saying we're completely willing to cheat because we know that if we vote to convict, Donald's going to have a temper tantrum and start a third party, which will, you know, decimate the Republican Party, and the Republican Party will never win countrywide elections again. Right?
Yeah.
But, and this is what happens when you don't neutralize, word of the day, neutralize. you don't take out the problem at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been taken out, well, long time ago, but certainly as soon as he didn't accept the results of the election.
Yeah.
On November 7th, McConnell on down. Congratulations, President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris. Shut up, Donald. That's what should have happened. And now they're beholden to him. Holy shit.
Yeah, they're acquiescing to terrorists is what they're doing. And what the Republicans don't understand, and it seems like Mitch McConnell doesn't even understand this, that the very next insurrection that could be a matter of days away. I mean, they're talking about some other uprising occurring in conjunction with the impeachment trial. Mitch McConnell and the rest of the Republicans, they could be on the hit list as well as the Democrats are. They think somehow they're immune. They were going to the insurrectionists were going to hang Mike Pence. Yep. They were going after the Republican vice president, the guy who was more loyal to Donald than anyone else in the federal government. And he was still targeted. So how do they think that by not punishing these people, including Donald, that they're somehow going to be immune from the next attack? That's one of the more maddening aspects of it. There's not even a sense of self-preservation, is there?
It's really weird because say that mob had gotten into the Senate.
Yeah.
Do you think they were going to ask for IDs?
That's right.
And, oh, you're a Republican. Or ask, okay, you're a Republican, but did you, did you congratulate Joe Biden? They weren't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is strangely, well, maybe it's not so strange because they're destructive.
Yeah.
And so is Donald, but they're also self-destructive. They are just destructive across the board.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. And I think part of it is, it's the same thing with COVID. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Why is there no sense of self-preservation here? Yeah. Unless they're just so arrogant that it doesn't apply to them. It's not going to happen. I guess that's it.
Why aren't...
Arrogance makes you stupid.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that's also confounding me, Mary, is I don't understand why Americans aren't more pissed off about the insurrection. I mean, there's some favorable poll numbers about, there was an insurrection and the people should be brought to justice. But it seems like, I mean, here's an example. I clearly remember the days after 9/11, the days, months and years after 9/11. And we're just not fired up like that now. And it seems ludicrous, given the fact that we saw it all played out live. With people storming, these insurrectionists storming into the United States Capitol, attacking the Article I powers, trying to subvert the will of the people across numerous states. And yet we're just like, okay, well, everything is happy and fine again. But it's not, because these people are just one election away from retaking power. And I'm talking maybe not necessarily the insurrectionists, but certainly the people who represent them on the political stage. And I wish there was more fury out there. I wish there was more rage at everyone who was involved with that. But there's not. I mean, what causes that resignation? What manufactures that? Why do people just resign themselves? Well, I guess this is the way it is.
Well, I think part of it is just we're all exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's an excuse, but it's true. Like, seriously, how much outrage can we sustain?
Yeah.
But more importantly, I think, and I hate saying this, but the Republicans are extraordinarily good at taking charge of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
This terrible thing happens. We need unity. Okay. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When Biden was saying that, half of us were like, no fucking way. I'm not unifying with these people.
Yeah.
And then they co-opt his message to protect the very people half of us don't want to be united with. the media don't help ever.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you're a Republican, you're going to listen to that message because, on some level that your people were just the ones storming the Capitol, they're the ones organizing it and inciting it. And, you want your team not to get blamed.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about the consequences, the potential consequences to the Republican Party. Mike Pence did absolutely nothing. He had no power. All he was doing was, this very symbolic, okay, the electors are counted.
Yeah.
That's all he did. They're calling for his hanging.
Yeah.
So, again, if en masse they had on November 7th declare the election won by Biden. It's over. We're done with, and just put Donald in the corner. They wouldn't be beholden.
Yeah.
To the people who are calling for the hanging of a Republican who did one tiny thing that he had no choice. Like what he was going to stand up and say, nope. Donald's still president for 4 years.
Yeah.
There's no universe in which that was going to happen, but they actually were, you know, riled up to believing that. And I think, you know, I've always thought, okay, why isn't there a group, a substantial group of Republicans who are willing to say to people, hey guys, you know, we're conservative, but we're not insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's take the Republican Party back for people like David Jolly and Steve Schmidt.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And it never happened. And I still think, like, any Republicans who stood up and said, if there were enough of them, said, you know, enough already. We cannot continue going down. They'd be heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't be, because they're just basically doing the decent thing. But instead, because there aren't enough of them, you know, there's not a critical mass of them, people who are standing up, like Liz Cheney, are probably going to get drummed out.
Yeah.
Liz Cheney, who knew?
Exactly right. Yeah. Suddenly Liz Cheney is the voice of reason in the Republican Party. I think all but 15 to 20% of the Republican Party believes that the election was fraudulent. I mean, we're talking about however the math works out. 85% of the Republicans are like, yeah, the election was a big fraud. And then you've got patient zero in this entire disinformation campaign, Fox News Channel, completely untouched. I mean, it's all well and good to eliminate Donald's Twitter account and to go after some of the financiers of the Republican Party and so on, get all of these companies to pull out their support. But at the same time, if you leave Fox News Channel untouched, and namely primetime Fox News Channel, where, for example, last night, Jim Jordan was on with Laura Ingraham talking about the same scam, the election was stolen, and so on, then you're committing to the fact that the discourse is going to be permanently skewed into this world of complete fiction. And that seems like this is going to continue to manifest more and more of these type of violent insurrection events, right?
Yeah, and you know, that's what happens when they accuse you of the things you're accusing them of.
Yeah.
The difference, of course, being our accusations are based on things they've actually done.
Mm-hmm.
But by, you know, using our own words against us and accusing us of the same things, it's like, oh, well, I guess, I mean, both sides, right?
Yeah.
Everybody does it or nobody does it. It completely undermines the legitimacy of any argument.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, you accuse me of storming the Capitol when I actually did, and then I accuse you, Antifa, of doing it.
Yeah.
It's just, so, I mean, we saw this with COVID. It's people listen to their leaders, right? Because if the person you put your trust in with your vote is telling you, don't wear a mask, why would you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I guess it's not that big a deal because they're not wearing masks either.
That's right.
And if you know, a senator from your party is telling you that impeaching Donald after he's out of office is unconstitutional, well, aren't senators supposed to know this shit?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does anybody know more about how the Senate works than Mitch McConnell? No, because he's been, you know, dismantling it for so long.
Yeah.
He knows how to. He knows how to use it against itself, right? So he knows that he knows it's not unconstitutional, but if he's saying, if the Senate majority leader is voting that it's unconstitutional, why wouldn't people who vote for him, why wouldn't they believe him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we Democrats, we're just out for blood. We're never satisfied, you know? Donald didn't do anything wrong. And even if he did, it doesn't matter because it's too late. And, you know, we just need to unify now. It's maddening.
Yeah, it's infuriating. And that's one of the things, one of the mortal sins of the tenure of Kellyanne Conway, for example, making the gaslighting, making us all feel like we're the crazy ones now, by reversing everything, by taking the Democratic talking points or whatever it happens to be, whatever the zeitgeist is on the left, taking that and turning it around on us again, co-opting it in exactly the way you just described. And that's one of the things, one of the many things that leads me to a no quarter policy. I think there should be no quarter for any of these people. The fact that she was able to go on Bill Maher a couple of weeks ago and, start her rehabilitation tour, et cetera. I'm not the only one to observe that even beyond the gaslighting and the switcheroo arguments that they make, the media training, doublespeak and dissembling that they often engage in, the Republicans are acting like guilty spousal abusers in the wake of all of this. I mean, they're all saying in lockstep, we should move on and forget what happened for the sake of unity, blah, 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 as you were just saying. But from a psychological perspective, what are some of the negative ramifications of taking their advice and just moving on? I mean, in other words, what happens to abuse victims if they're prevented from holding their abusers accountable?
Oh, my God. That's how you end up dead.
Yeah.
Or end up killing the person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know this would never happen, but part of me wants Joe Biden to start, just stealing money from the Treasury and, making himself king.
Yeah. Ignoring the virus.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I don't want him to do that.
No.
But, like, I want him to start doing the Democratic version of usurping powers that he doesn't have and shouldn't have, because that's what they've let open themselves up to. However, they'll never let that happen with a Democrat, right?
Yeah.
So, because the hypocrisy is so blatant. But if we don't, and I don't think we're going to, and it just makes me crazy. The fact that Hawley, Cruz et al. Are still in the Senate, but are serving as jurors when they are seditionists, is so debilitating. It's so deleterious to our democracy, because nothing is going to stop them. Absolutely nothing is going to stop them. They are going to keep cheating. They're going to do everything in their power to get the White House again. And when that happens, if that happens, we're done.
Yeah.
We're absolutely done. So that's why the Democrats need to wake the fuck up and stop playing by rules that no longer exist. I think that, take the majority, run the Senate and the country as if you have 79 Senate seats instead of 50, right? And just shove everything through. Same thing with executive orders. Get rid of Fox News somehow. I don't know how, but do that, right? Sanction people. And if they do that, if they get money in people's pockets, if they get COVID under control, if they, do all of these things that are very popular with people of both parties, then that, I think, is the only way through, because people will see that government actually can work for them. Otherwise, forget about it. It's just going to be 2 years of knockdown, drag out, bare knuckle, brass knuckle fighting on the Republicans' part, delaying, obstructing, lying, changing the subject, spinning everything we do to make it sound horrible. And then, we lose the Senate in 2022.
Yeah, this is the whole power share. This goes back to the whole power sharing thing we were talking about initially, and it loops in Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. And the reason Mitch McConnell wanted to do the power sharing in the Senate is because he was concerned about Chuck Schumer voting to eliminate the legislative filibuster. And then for some reason, somehow, Joe Manchin's office and Kyrsten Sinema's office both let it slip that they weren't going to vote in support of eliminating the legislative filibuster. So Mitch McConnell's like, well, why do I need the power sharing thing anymore? I'm going to walk away from this. And so he did. And so he, because now he's going to be Captain Filibuster from now through whenever the Democrats end up losing Congress, which could actually be in 2022. So that's the... That's what we're going to face now. We're going to be facing constant filibusters. I mean, we saw it throughout the, especially the early Obama years. The Republicans literally blocked everything that came down the pike that originated, especially the things that originated with Democrats. They did not give Barack Obama a goddamn thing. And that's going to happen all over again. And so I feel like part of this has to do with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. I keep wondering, how do we make it safe for some of these red state Democrats to, they're stuck in a trash compactor themselves. I mean, they don't know which way to go necessarily based on the fact that, yes, while they're part of the Democratic caucus, they still have people at home who need to vote for them. So we just got to make it safer for them to be able to stick with the Democratic caucus on some of these things. And I don't know how the hell that can possibly happen, given the current condition of our politics in this country. It's immensely frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah. And I would say that, first of all, Arizona, Mark Kelly, we can do a lot better than Kyrsten Sinema.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. but first of all, to say I will never vote to remove the filibuster is ridiculous. So there's literally nothing that would change your mind, including the Republicans filibustering everything so people keep starving and dying of COVID.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a stupid stance to take anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up there with, oh, I'm not going to vote to convict him, no matter what evidence I say. Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah.
But what they, those two don't seem to understand is they will be much more powerful if they get rid of the filibuster.
Yeah.
Than they would be if we keep it. Because if we keep it, then McConnell's the guy with the power. So the only hope we have is that, unlike McConnell, Schumer will bring bills to the floor of the Senate for a vote.
Yeah.
And I mean, that one of the reasons they got away with so much, because nobody ever on the Republican side ever had to, you know, they never publicly had to declare their opposition for anything because they never voted on anything.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like, they will have to. So yeah. We will know. People will know, oh, wow, all of these Republicans don't want us to have COVID relief.
That's right.
And it's not just, oh, the Republicans. It's this specific Republican, this guy who's up for re-election in 20. You know, so that will help bring some pressure to bear, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, you know, red state Democrats, I think it's that. Just, you know, do things that are going to help people, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
It really isn't. And I feel like there are concessions that could be made to Sinema and Manchin that might convince them to support, you know, the elimination of the legislative filibuster. It seems like there's some more negotiating that could go on there that would make it a little more palatable, that would give them some sort of ammunition to be able to go back home and say, well, look, I'm voting to eliminate the filibuster, but you know what? I got you this and this and this because the legislative filibuster is gone. And that's going to be a net positive for the people of West Virginia, the people of Arizona. But it doesn't seem like that's necessarily on the table. But the good news is, when it comes to COVID relief and things like that, I think the reconciliation votes are on the table, where they can pass some of these budget-related bills with just 51 votes, where they don't need to go through the constant, endless loop of cloture motions and all the rest of it. So they can at least get a few things done that are budget-related, and that's going to be some good news along the way. And I think one of the things they can do is probably related to the Affordable Care Act, they can start doing some things as far as improving that with some reconciliation votes. But again, it's like, good God. I mean, I get the idea of the tyranny of the majority, but enough is enough. These people don't act in good faith anymore. Why should we continue to give them some sort of voice as a minority power in the Congress? It just doesn't make any sense.
I totally agree with you, and that's why I say, we should act like we have 100% of the Senate seats, not just 71. Right. They deserve nothing. They don't deserve a seat at the table. They've basically burned the table to a crisp.
Yeah.
So there's no table. And that's one of the unforgivable sins of Sinema and Manchin, is that they, for no reason at all, totally torpedoed any leverage Schumer would have had.
Mm-hmm.
Because all we needed was the threat of ending the filibuster to keep him in line.
Yeah.
And now we don't have that. So, so at the moment, it looks like we're going to be reduced to doing things through reconciliation as far as we can. And look, that's not nothing, because a lot of our problems right now are budgetary issues.
Mm-hmm.
It will be good to get money in people's pockets, and will be good to be funding all sorts of COVID-related things and et cetera. I'm trying to, one of the things, I so share your frustration, and it's really enervating at this point, because I don't understand, we're not politicians, I'm not an expert in constitutional law or anything like that, but I mean, they try to steal the election. They incited an armed insurrection. At what point do Democrats understand this is a fucking emergency?
Okay, we'll get back to our conversation with Mary Trump here in just a second. But first, imagine this Valentine's Day story is you. You're parked outside the restaurant where you're meeting your date in just 10 minutes. Glancing in the mirror, you cringe. Oh my God, not on Valentine's Day. You can't go in with those bags under your eyes, not to mention crow's feet. Well, you rummage through your purse saying, please tell me I have my Plexiderm with me. And bingo, there it is. You apply the clear serum under your eyes and smile confidently, knowing that in 10 minutes, you're going to look fresh, bright-eyed, and years, years younger. Plexiderm is the clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under-eye bags in minutes. It's the Valentine's Day gift you give yourself. You can try a 6-day, 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit buyplx.com. Or call 800-685-1292 and give the code VOICES. This order also comes with free shipping and a 30-day money-back guarantee in case you don't like it. Make those wrinkles, lines, and under-eye bags disappear with Plexiderm. Visit buyplx.com or call 800-685-1292 and say the code VOICES at checkout. Thank you, Stephanie.
Izier, that is A-I-S-I-E-R. What is it? Luxurious modern sleepwear for the independent woman. Their sleepwear is made from 100% washable silk. Oh, silk is known to reduce skin surface moisture loss and limit skin irritation. Best of all, it's comfortable, so lightweight, it feels like a second skin. It'll keep you warm in the winter and cool in the summer with a fabric that loves your skin all year round. And in every type of weather, wearing silk to sleep is simply therapy at night. Izier is owned by an amazing woman, a single mom. Their products are made right here in California. You can feel good about supporting a small business delivering high-quality products. Now is the perfect time. Treat yourself or a loved one to something extra special to sleep and lounge in during Izier's Valentine's sale. Go to shopizier.com/discount/Stephanie. Use the discount code Stephanie, 10% off your order. That's shopizier.com/discount/Stephanie. Use that code Stephanie for 10% off your order.
The Bob Seska Show.
You know what, Mary? You are really good at talking about this crap. And I'm just not just on this show or not just on Lawrence O'Donnell. You are extraordinarily smart and good at politics. And the question that I have just occurred to me, have you ever considered running for anything? Because you would be amazing.
I people have asked me that question, but I've never had to answer it because it's on Twitter. Honestly, first of all, I'm moving into Manhattan, so it would kind of be why
limits your opportunities.
And honestly, it's the kind of situation where if I'm going to walk my walk, then I would have to start with something small, right? And because it one of the biggest reasons we're in the trouble we're in is that people keep electing unqualified, stupid, corrupt people who don't understand anything about government. So, you know, people with absolutely no relevant experience.
Well, you're none of those things, but though you know what you're talking about.
Thank you have
yeah, you have things that I would say make you qualified to, you know, even if you start at the local level, I'm lumping on all kinds of pressure. Like, oh, you got to do it now. It's like peer pressure. You got to try it. You got to do it. The country needs you.
I wouldn't get elected because I live in this really conservative place, which I need to escape from immediately. But I mean, I guess part of me also feels like that. Yes, I've thought about it. I've also thought about like how, though, and where to start. And I think, at least for the foreseeable future, I think I am more effective.
Yeah.
I'm writing another book, which I hope will be timely. I might be more effective sort of outside, but I don't know. I mean, there aren't any opportunities that present themselves at the moment. If we're staying here, I might have thought about running, primarying our congresswoman because she's a former Republican who voted against Nancy Pelosi, and which was just, I don't know, that bothered me. But I'm not staying here, so I don't know. So I'd have to see wherever I wind up if there's anything that any opportunities present themselves, but certainly nobody's approached me about it. So I think that's something that needs to happen if that hasn't happened.
Well, I mean, based on your last name alone, you might actually be able to pick up some idiot Republican votes. Be like, oh, there's a Trump on the ballot. I had no idea. Yes, I'm voting for Mary Trump. And you know, some of the red hat and the Oakley sunglasses on their hat and, you know, all the rest of it, the uniform, as I call it. But so I got to ask you, based on Donald's pathology, what do you think is running through his head these days? Is he capable of being depressed or racked with self-doubt as many ex-presidents are?
No, no, okay. I wish. No, he's angry.
Yeah.
He's just enraged because he can't face his fear. Because he's really terrified, but he can't face it. So he covers it with rage. And he's just spinning madly, trying to figure out a way to stay relevant. He must be miserable. I mean, he hasn't been on the front page of the paper except, you know, Joe Biden is overturning what Donald did with this.
Yes.
Or, you know, Donald's getting impeached. You know, like that's it. So that's making him insane. And I think this bullshit about a third party, which of course he didn't come up with, was presented as a way for him to stay relevant. Because if he doesn't, if the Republicans don't convict him, if they don't invoke Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which would make it impossible for him to run for office again.
Yep.
Then they are beholden to him until he drops dead. And he will be, you know, the de facto head of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And he will always have that threat to hold over their heads of the Patriot Party.
Right, right.
You know. So, I mean, couldn't happen to a nicer party. However, it's terrible for the rest of us, too.
For the record, I was chuckling at the notion of Donald dropping dead. When you said when he drops dead, that always makes me laugh. When I hear anything regarding him dropping dead.
I tried not to acknowledge that, but let's acknowledge that, shall we? Yeah.
So, but let me
know how like people always say things like, well, you know, not that I would wish that on anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Okay. Moving in this case, I'll make an exception here. Yeah, I got to ask you too. Someone who is accustomed to having a giant megaphone all the time, having a platform where he can scream and bitch and do whatever else he does, whine especially, when you take that away, what happens to that person, and how do they substitute for that? You know, I'd hate to be a caddy at Mar-a-Lago right now.
God. Oh, yes, you would. I mean, probably ever, but especially now.
Yeah.
He'll you know, engage in lots of displacement. People, anybody around him is feeling the sting of his wrath, which has nothing to do with him. He is, you know, it's hard to say exactly, but let's take it to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you put Donald in solitary confinement, you know, with no newspapers and no TVs and or just like books to read that he can't read.
Also makes me laugh.
Yeah. He would cease to exist. If this is somebody who is all false self.
Yeah.
Seriously. So, obviously, you know, he's still surrounded by sycophants and, I'm sure they are making the most of any mentions he's getting and on Newsmax and OAN are on constantly. But, you know, without Twitter,
mm-hmm.
And without dominating coverage the way he has by virtue of his position, he's having a crisis that he's in a crisis the likes of which he's never, ever encountered before.
Yeah.
And I wonder has he been seen publicly or has he released any videos or anything?
I haven't seen anything. And it's, you actually raise a good point, Mary, because, you know, it's nice to not have to look at his bullshit around the clock on Twitter. It's nice to have him gone and not have that voice. Of course, there's lots of advantages to that, lots of upsides to it. But on the other hand, and this is so weird, I don't think I've ever articulated this publicly, it's a little unsettling not knowing what he's thinking right now. It's sort of like the comedian John Mulaney says this in his stand-up. Trump is like a horse in a hospital. You imagine a horse just loose randomly in a hospital. But the weirdest thing, Mulaney says, are the times when we don't hear from the horse at all. And that's what I keep thinking about. Like, what was there kind of an upside to knowing what crazy shit was running through his head from moment to moment to moment? And it seems like there was that little sliver of upside to the fact that he had that platform, but now it's gone. And so we're left in that kind of, it's a little bit unnerving, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think the upside is greater than the downside for a couple of reasons. First of all, it automatically decreases his relevance exponentially.
Yeah.
And that's important. He needed to be rendered irrelevant. Now, because the Republicans suck, he's not completely relevant, but, you know, he has much less presence, sway, by virtue of the fact that he's silent and silenced. So that's all good. And also, you know, it's not his thoughts we have to worry about. It's his enabler's thoughts. Like, you know, who came up with this third party idea? Not him. You know, so what are they coming up with that he'll glom onto as a way to get attention again, as a way to, you know, get back some of his power? But part of me wonders if the silence is because he just can't pull it together, because he's unraveling. Because I think, you know, probably anybody in his position, like Obama, even, you know, George W. Bush, even though they serve both terms, you know, there's got to be some depression. Like, now what? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So you add on top of that the loss of power and relevance and the fact that he lost in this decisive way, you know, because he knows when he says that he's got more votes than anybody in history who is running again, he also knows that he got 8 million fewer votes than the guy who won. So because it's hard for me to think of anything anybody around him could do to assuage those wounds. And I don't think there is anything. So I think he's just like a ball of rage.
Yeah. You know, he used to say during his rallies, especially the rallies last year, is that if he lost the election, we would never hear from him again. And I wonder if that was a guilt trip or if that was a legitimate prediction or a legitimate forecast in terms of what we can expect. You know what I mean? Like either he was doing like the, well, I did all this hard work for you people and you didn't do what you needed to do for me. I mean, I slaved on my hands and knees all this time and you didn't reelect me. So I'm just going to disappear. I'm going to do a goodbye, cruel world. Like you see on discussion boards all the time. Like I'm leaving this discussion board and I'm never coming back. And then 5 minutes later, like, are they talking about me? And, maybe that's what he was doing, or maybe he was forecasting. Is there something about his psychology even that would lead him to say, all right, I've lost, I've been humiliated, so I can never show my face in public again?
No. I mean, I think at the time he was saying it, it was definitely a threat, but it was also, a lot of the things he says are to make himself feel better, to protect him.
Yeah.
I always found that to be a fascinating admission. So it suggested on some level that he knew that it was a possibility. But again, not that he is accepting it. He will say until the day he dies, it was stolen from him. It was rigged. He really won. So I think it's more that he is doing everything in his power to avoid those feelings.
Right.
He cannot allow himself to feel humiliated. I seriously think that he would just melt.
Were you surprised when he finally conceded? I know he did it more or less under duress, under like a save his own ass kind of situation right after the insurrection. But one of the things that we talked about, and I've heard you talk about it on Lawrence O'Donnell's show too, where it's not in his DNA to do this. He is equally incapable of running the New York Marathon as he is of conceding defeat. So what do you think finally pulled the trigger from him as far as admitting that he was no longer going to be president?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important to point out that he did not concede.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he admitted that, well, he didn't even say Joe Biden's name. He admitted there was going to be a new administration. That's not a concession, because the implication was they stole it from me, but I'm just going to have to let it go because the deep state is aligned against me, that kind of thing.
Right.
So I wasn't surprised. And I think it was very simple. He was told, if you don't do this, you are criminally liable for what happened. And, no matter what happens in the Senate with your impeachment trial, you could be criminally liable elsewhere. And you were looking down the barrel at so many lawsuits, at so many potential criminal charges at the state level. You're looking at so many serious potential financial difficulties because banks won't loan you money. And the ones who have loaned you money want their money back. So stop this right now.
Right, right. And it also,
this will dwarf everything else in terms of its implications.
It also makes me laugh to think about him being in all kinds of legal trouble. Like I imagine him just having a trash can under his mail slot at Mar-a-Lago and all the lawsuits and legal bills come in. He's just collecting them all in a big trash bin. Exactly. Lots and lots of subpoenas. Just makes me smile the smile of all smiles. Hey, on a completely unrelated topic, a few days ago you tweeted this and it made me smile. Again, once again, speaking of smiles, it made me smile. You said Glenn Greenwald can fuck right off. And I, of course, agree with you 1,000%. I was on the fuck Glenn Greenwald train 7-8 years ago. But what specifically set you off about Glenn this time?
That was a very dense tweet. And I think I should have tweeted that separately because there was a lot going on in that tweet, if I remember correctly. Because I forgot it's Twitter. And density doesn't fly. But I'm glad I, you know, at least I gave it that its own line with spacing, that Glenn Greenwald can fuck right off.
Yes.
It was because he basically advocated for the firing of this New York Times editor, I believe, who had the audacity to tweet during Biden's inauguration, "I have chills." Like, he went after her.
God damn it, Glenn.
Like, you gotta be, seriously, get a fucking hobby. Like, that's...
Yeah.
You know, how dare she have a basic human response? And also, it didn't... There was no contact. Like, it could have been bat chills. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, what? And also, who cares? She's a human being.
Glenn is one of the...
I don't know.
He's one of the least... Yeah, Glenn Greenwald is one of the least self-aware people I know of. And this is another example where he has been screaming for the last, well, since Inauguration Day, about how there's no more adversarial journalism in Washington anymore. But yet he spent the previous 4 years taking a giant dump on any New York Times or Washington Post piece that was exposing what was going on behind the scenes in the Trump administration. So either he likes adversarial journalism or he hates adversarial journalism. The point is that he is neither. He's just an antagonist. He is like the political version of Woody Woodpecker. He's just an instigator, a disruption agent. And that's what frustrates me more than anything else, on top of his shoddy excuse for journalism. Just the fact that he likes to do this shit. He likes to enrage people.
Yeah. I mean, he's like where the far left meets the far right and you know, basically has no ideology. Like, they just cancel each other out. And he's, you're right. And it's, I guess, provocateur would be the word, but he's not provoked. I don't know. It's just thoughtless and incendiary just for effect. And, there's literally no point to it. And it's just laden with hypocrisy. I mean, how many male journalists get to emote all over the place?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
They don't get fired.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not surprising that, you know, somebody like Glenn Greenwald would have been the one to pick up that particular torch.
And by the way, I notice that just about everyone, I mean, I do it all the time. Everyone I know does it all the time. We all need two shots at pronouncing his name for some reason. He has got a tongue twister name.
Weird.
And that absolutely increases my level of frustration about him. And it's not even his fault. Oh, God. Well,
everything's his fault.
Yes. You know what? I agree with you on that, too. So, Mary, can you talk, as we wrap up here, can you talk about the status of your lawsuit against Donald, or is that something that's verboten for you?
No. You know, it's like legal time and judicial time and Senate time and COVID time. Very distorted. We're almost through phase one.
Good.
Which is hysterical. So, you know, they of course want the lawsuit thrown away. And they're claiming that the statute of limitations has passed.
Ah.
And, you know, technically it has, in the sense that it's a 2-year statute of limitations. This happened in 2000. However, I did not become aware of the fraud until the Times published its article in 2018.
Yeah.
So we're arguing, of course, that the clock started ticking on October 2nd, 2018. So they just filed their final brief and we have to respond. I mean, I think that's happening this month.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as you can imagine, their arguments are the last one. It was said it was full of my first whatever it's called brief that my lawyers put together. Donald's lawyers claimed that our brief was full of, get this, conspiracy theories.
Jesus Christ,
so
really?
It was as high quality as you can imagine. And you know, I have the best lawyers on the planet. Like their initial complaint was like a friggin' novel.
Mm-hmm.
It was so brilliant. It was literature. So I'm not really worried. The bottom line, though, because and this is the last step, and then the judge decides. And if he decides that, indeed, the statute of limitations passed, then it's over and nothing happens and they get away with it yet again.
Mm-hmm.
But if he says, nope, good to go, then we're on to the important phase.
Wonderful.
And that would be great because nothing would give me more pleasure.
Yes.
Than taking all of their money and using it actually to do good things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, you know what? At the very least, you're being an irritant to Uncle Donald, and that's always a plus. Anyone who's an irritant to Donald Trump is okay with me. That's please proceed.
You want to come to his deposition?
Oh, yes. Oh, please. Yes. Can I please? Oh, my God. I'm serious. I'll pay my own way. I'll stay. I'll put myself up. And oh, my God. And I'll bring the pizza. You know, that'll be wonderful. Okay. Now I'm convinced that I need to be there. Okay, so now you've opened a whole can of worms. All right, one more question for you, Mary. You mentioned your book. It's still dropping in July, yes?
Presumably.
Presumably. Yeah,
that's sort of entirely up to me.
Yeah.
But not up to me, but, you know, down to me, I guess.
Right, right.
So, because, you know, got to finish writing it.
Yeah.
And I supposed to have it handed in. In April. So, you know, plugging away, but it's kind of a difficult time actually to be writing a book about trauma while we're all in the midst of being traumatized.
Yeah.
But it was really important to me that I do this.
And the trauma topic is specific to, politics, or is this separate from the political arena?
Well, it's mostly about, you know, how are we going to deal with the coming mental health crisis that is barreling our way as soon as we all start emerging from COVID, right? Like sort of the way I look at it is it's as if everybody in the country went to war at the same time, having varying levels of, you know, experience, and we all came back at the same time. And, you know, some of us are going to have really bad complex PTSD, and some of us are going to have a depression or anxiety or substance abuse issues or what have you. But at the best of times, this country doesn't deal with mental illness properly.
Yeah.
We treat, you know, mental health like it's a luxury for rich people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to start thinking long and hard about how to, you know, to help people at the community level and, you know, have different, how we need to put in place structures that will streamline getting care to people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the book actually starts with an examination of the fact that this country was born in trauma.
Yeah.
And not only have we never atoned for those traumas that the majority inflicted upon two entire races of people, we've barely ever acknowledged it. So between that and the fact that we've always failed to hold people accountable, hello, Robert E. Lee, who went on to have a career as the president of a university that was then named after him.
Yep.
You know, that's how a couple of the major reasons we're here now.
Yeah.
And we got to look back at that too. So it's a fairly dense project, but
super, super important though.
Urgency.
Yeah. Urgency is a great way to put it. It is super duper important because I mean, you are on the cusp of something that is absolutely going to be a crisis in this country. And I'm so glad that you're right there on top of it. Mary, you have been, first of all, you're a genius. And I think we all know that. But the other thing is, I have to thank you for putting yourself out there and for, in a way, making yourself a target. target, because I'm sure that you became a target for a lot of horrible, horrible people. But you made that sacrifice, and especially at a time when we need it the most as a nation. And certainly, you know, speaking for those of us on the left side of the ledger, that your contributions to all of this have been absolutely invaluable. And knowing that that era of his presidency is over, I'm so looking forward to the next chapter of what it is you do and your contributions here. So please, please keep going. Please stay in the public view. And you're, of course, always invited to be on this little teeny tiny show, too. So,
well, I'm really grateful. And I'm also for that. And I'm also grateful that there's not video, because I'm blushing.
Okay. we'll imagine it. Oh my God. Well, thank you again for your time today, Mary. It's such a pleasure, and I so, so appreciate it.
Yeah, you're one of the best interviewers out there. This is always a treat for me. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time, and there will be many next times.
Absolutely.
All right, take care. Bye bye.
All right, stay safe.
You too. Bye bye. Imagine this Valentine's Day story is you. You're parked outside the restaurant where you're meeting your date in 10 minutes. Glancing in the mirror, you cringe. Not on Valentine's Day. You can't go in with those bags under your eyes, not to mention crow's feet. You rummage through your purse saying, please tell me I have my Plexiderm with me. And bingo, there it is. You apply the clear serum under your eyes and smile confidently, knowing that in minutes you'll look fresh, bright-eyed, and years younger. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under eye bags in just minutes. It's the Valentine's Day gift you give yourself. You can try a 6-day, 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit buyplx.com or call 800-685-1292 and say the code VOICES. This order also comes with free shipping and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Make those wrinkles, lines, and under eye bags disappear with Plexiderm. Visit buyplx.com or call 800-685-1292 and say the code VOICES at checkout. Thank you.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.